10. All right, this is tape 2, side 1. We're here with Mr. Joseph Saul, and I'm Sarah Gorby with my partner, Marlene Gelman, for National Council of Jewish Women. Mr. Saul, would you please tell us your name and address again?
My name is Joseph Saul, and we live at 144 North District Street in Pittsburgh.
Mr. Saul, last time we talked about your brothers and sisters coming to America, but we didn't talk much about their names and what they did. Would you mind telling us that?
My first brother came to the United States when he was 14 years old in 1906. We had a lot of cousins, and also my mother had a sister in Pittsburgh, Mrs. Brody, and her son was Lou Brody, that was connected in the early 20s with the Temple Haute of Shalom. He was the executive secretary of the... And my second brother came here in 1908. My third brother came here in 1910. My fourth brother came in 1913. Because as soon as they reached the age of 14 and they stopped going to cheder, they couldn't go to any high school.
Your names, too. Your first brother's name?
Yeah. My first brother was Morris Saul. Second brother, David Saul. My third brother, Albert Saul. And my fourth brother, Milt Saul. And Milt Saul and I are the only survivors of the family. In 1914, the First World War broke out, and we lost all our contacts with our brothers in the United States. But in 1920, in March, we received a telegram that my brother, Albert Saul, who was a veteran of the First World War, is living on a ship to Europe and is coming to Suval to bring us to the United States. And, of course, we were sitting for 3 weeks and waiting for him to come. And finally, he arrived. See, when he arrived in Suval, of course, he brought a lot of regards, because in Pittsburgh, there is a lot of landslide, and they knew that he's coming to Suval to send regards and also money for their relatives in Suval. We were, my parents, mother and father, and my two sisters, Zina Saul and Sonia Saul, and I had another brother, Arthur Saul. Arthur Saul was a linguist. He knew already English in Europe, and in French, German, and specialized in languages. So when he came in Pittsburgh in 1920, he received a job with the Mellon Bank in the foreign department. And he was the only Jewish person working in the bank. And they didn't know that he was Jewish. But when it's Rosh Hashanah and he took off, they discovered that he's Jewish. And Mr. Mellon was very much interested in him, and he thought he was a friend of the family, the rabbi's family in Pittsburgh, and he wanted him to introduce to one of their daughters.
And your other brothers? Your other brothers, what were they doing here?
Well, my Albert other brothers, became... they were traveling salesmen, mm-hmm. and they were selling on the road shirts and also men's clothing.
Right. And Xenia, we know, worked for the to help immigrants.
Their first job was with the Council of Jewish Women for their immigrants, and afterwards the organization joined together with the Jewish family and children, and she worked till the day she died, till March 12, 1967.
And your other sister?
My other sister, she didn't work because my mother was not very well, and therefore she actually was a housekeeper. Mm-hmm. She did the cooking and shopping and keeping the house.
Okay, thank you. And then we went in a little bit into your job at Morgan and Kaufman.
Yeah. See, I got hired away at a job on Fifth Avenue, and I was only on the same job for 50 years, from 1920 to 1970. First, it was called Harry Morgan, but in 1933, Mr. Mitchell Kaufman, who was the brother-in-law to Mr. Morgan, joined the firm, and he became a partner. But Mr. Morgan died, and since I was the most experienced person in the firm, I became the manager and the buyer for the men's clothing. And of course, Fifth Avenue at that time was entirely different from what it's now. The stores were open, most of them were open 7 days a week. And Sunday was the biggest day, and hundreds of people came from different towns, from Ohio, West Virginia, from Johnstown, and they came to shop on Fifth Avenue in Pittsburgh, and that was the busy day. Of course, it was also wholesale, not only retail. But besides everything, it was also a cultural center. It was interesting that in Halpern's store, Judge Halpern's parents, when you went into the store, they didn't wait on you. They were sitting and reading books and discussing Harry Perelman. That's all what he was doing while he was in the store, but he was only discussing books. And also the Allen Brothers store, they were all just reading and discussing books. Of course, there were more than 100 peddlers in Pittsburgh, and they all did business on Fifth Avenue. And the peddler was only busy twice a month when he was collecting a dollar from the family. But most of the time, they had nothing to do. So they used to go in to one store and the other and discuss all the problems that the Jewish community was facing. Of course, Yiddish was at that time a very, very important language, and on Labor Light, the Labor Lyceum on 35 Miller Street was an educational center, and there was hardly a week that somebody outstanding in the world, not only in the United States, but worldwide, that didn't come to Pittsburgh and gave a lecture, or two or three. And I'll never forget the lecture that I heard in 1923, and it was the six characters of the world literature. And a man who came from London, who was a Gentile, spoke in Yiddish, and he gave a lecture on the six characters of the world literature. Of course, also like Dr. Shatlovsky, who was a great Yiddish philosopher, used to come annually and speak about our great cultural heritage. And the same thing with all the other organizations. By 1944, we developed already on the hill. There was nothing there anymore, and it was mostly color. So we opened a Yiddish cultural center, which is still in existence, at 6328 4th Avenue. And it's still called the Labor Zionist Yiddish Cultural Center.
You said the Labor Lyceum, and that, where was that?
On Miller Street.
On Miller Street.
On 35 Miller Street.
And so you were there a lot. You spent a lot of time there. Yes.
Sure, because there was all the lectures. Uh-huh. And I used to come from Nicholson Street every evening to Miller Street, because to get a lecture or planning lectures, mm-hmm. having meetings. And all the Yiddish-speaking organizations used to meet in the Labor Lyceum.
Labor Lyceum. You spent a lot of time on the hill there. Was there anywhere else you went on the hill?
No, just
there.
High there, and of course in Weinstein's restaurant.
And where was Weinstein's restaurant?
It was 1832 Center Avenue.
Center Avenue, I remember that. And you spent, after the lectures, you would
after
go there?
After the lectures, we used to come in 10:30, 11 o'clock, used to go in for tea or coffee on Wednesday and Thursday.
Talk about you were very active in the Labor Zionist organization.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and who some of the people you were active with.
We knew everybody and the Labor Zionist organization at that time had a very big membership, and in that time, if you gave a contribution, a dollar was considered important money, and the Statute of Israel started on the hill in Pittsburgh, and once a year they used to collect between $1 and $5.
And you had some offices in the Labor Zionist, you told us.
When I came back from Israel, I became the secretary, and I'm still the secretary.
You're still the secretary, so you still send out letters?
Letters, and have contact, and we were also originally a fraternal organization, and we were an insurance organization. Only in 1983, we gave up our insurance to the Metropolitan, because, you see, the people were too old to keep it up, and very few new members are joining and taking up policies. So the insurance department was given up. And now it's strictly a organization to be in contact with Israel.
Who was your president when you came back from Israel in 1940? When did you come back from Israel? What was
it? 1963.
1963. Who were some of the people that were active with you?
It was Sam Berman and Eddie Steinfeld, and Mr. Pearl was the secretary for 40 years, and Ralph Morris.
Yes. So, also, you talked about the Yiddish theater. Who were some of the people that you were active with there?
You see, the Yiddish theater used to come every year. They used to come and perform. And there was a Yiddish theater on Center Avenue, and also we used to have it in the Carnegie Lecture Hall. We used to run the Carnegie Lecture Hall and have performers, singers, and even sometimes a group of 10 or 12 actors.
Were you ever helped to bring them over, or you just enjoyed going?
I always did, and even today we have the Yiddish Festival in Pittsburgh, and it's the Jewish Community Center, the Labor Zionist, the Zionist Labor Zionist, and the Workman Circle. We are the three organizations, and we are still functioning now.
That's wonderful. And your wife was interested in politics when you met her. Does she still continue?
She was very much interested in the 30s in the Spanish organization or Spanish democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very much interested in that. We met, and we got married.
And she continued to work as a librarian?
Yes, she kept on librarian, and also active, and she was the president of the women's division for Technion, for many, many years.
She was the president of the women's division. And so that was, that Technion, what does Technion do?
Technion, it's an organization like Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, is the Technion in Haifa. And it's a very, very important university. And of course, the most important thing is to get scholarships. And that's the way they used to raise scholarships.
And when you were in Israel, did you visit Technion?
Oh, yes. Not only we visit, but Technion, Mr. Alpert, who was the head of Technion for many years, used to send a taxi cab and take us over to Technion and take us around and see all the different plaques for the Pittsburgh people. Florence Redner, the native Redner, for the big contributors to for the Technion.
Okay, so then you told us a little bit about your year in Israel. Would you like to tell us anything more?
The most important thing was there were two things that made our life in Israel interesting. In 1920, before we went to the United States, we had a group of kids, 200, that were getting ready to go to Israel. And in 1920, 199 went to Israel, and I was the only one that went because my brother came and he went to the United States. So every time that we visited Israel, we had a reunion with most of the people. And in 1983, when the last time we had a reunion, only 17 out of the 200 still survived. And of course, the year that we stayed there, we used to meet, and it was very interesting because they were very, very active in the life of Israel. I don't know if I told you the story about Pinchas Sapir, who was the head of the Secretary of Finance of the Israel government. See, and he came from a town. And in 1977, he was in the hotel, and I introduced myself to him. Who, he said, you live number 48, first of May Street. And that was in 1920, and this was in 1977. I said, how do you remember? Oh, I used to come to take lessons from your sister Zina.
That's something.
See, this is the number one reason why it was very interesting. And the number two was very interesting because when I went, going to the United States, we had to go to Warsaw to get a visa. And of course, when I was in Warsaw, I went to a lecture. And the lecture...
Yeah, about the man that you met?
Yes,
what was
Sobobo.
His name again? Sobobo. So you met him in Israel, okay?
I went to a lecture, and he was running for the Polish parliament, same, and they were selling pictures, and I bought a picture. That was in 1920. In 1962, we opened up the Jewish Chronicle, and on the front page there was a picture of Mr. Sobobo, who's coming to give a lecture in Pittsburgh. And I went to my archives, and I took out the picture, and I took my wife, and we went to the lecture, and we showed Mr. Sobobo the picture. He couldn't get over it. And though I don't drive a car, I had to take him the next morning, 6 o'clock, to the airport. The next year, when we came to Israel, we visited a Yiddish writer, Gittel Meisler, that I never met before, but her brother was a editor of a magazine in New York, and I was a very good friend of her brother, so I went to visit her. And I told her the story about Sobobo. When we came back to the hotel, the telephone rang, and it says, this is Mr. Sobobo. You're in Tel Aviv and you didn't call me. I'm coming over to see you right away. And he came over to see me. And when he came, the manager of the hotel came over to me and says, who are you, Mr. So? I says, why? He says, Mr. Sobobo came to see you. It must be somebody. And while we were the year there, there was hardly a week that we did not spend with Mr. Sobobo. And he still took us around to different educational centers and different places. And therefore, it's made very interesting.
Would you spell Mr. Sobobo? Will you spell the name for us?
Z-R-U-B-E-V-A-L.
You also, he must have told you, given you a look of Israel that most people wouldn't have looked.
The average person doesn't
know. Right, the average person doesn't know.
We also had a very great way through Hermann Recht. I don't know if you know, Hermann Recht was an attorney, and he was the head of the musical series of the Y. And he brought in Pittsburgh Mr. Daniel Barenboim, who was 60 years old at the time. Now he's a conductor, but that time he was a pianist. And he came to Pittsburgh, and Mr. Recht, who was a good friend of mine, says, oh, you live in Israel? He says, yes, my parents live there permanently. Oh, he says, your parents? My friends are now in Israel. And he gave our address to Mr. Daniel Barenboim, and he wrote a letter to his parents. And the parents called us. And every Friday night, all the outstanding people in the music world used to come to Barenboim's house, and we used to be invited.
And you also told us last time that you lived across the street from Moshe Dayan.
Oh, yes, that was. See, that's another thing. See, when we came to Israel, we needed an apartment. So how do you get an apartment in Israel? It's not so easy. But before we left, Jack Walk, who was at that time the head of the Banks of Israel, was a friend of mine because he was also on Fifth Avenue. And he said, I want to send a present to a general in the Israeli army. His name is Rachabim Zevi, but everybody calls him Gandhi. And when we came by ship, Gandhi met us in Haifa. And we didn't have to go through customs, nothing. And he right away got us a villa in Sahala, which 600 officers of the Israeli army lived. And Mr. Dayan was like a neighbor right across the street from us.
Was he a good neighbor? Did you get to know him?
I mean, we didn't have a chance to.
Oh, you didn't know him,
but But Mr. Gandhi used to help us shop and get things that was very hard to get, but
wonderful.
We got it through him.
You told us also that you traveled a lot in your life.
Oh, yes.
And everywhere you went.
See, my wife used to work, but she used to get 3 months vacation.
Uh-huh.
She used to. And I worked 7 days a week, and I used to get 10 weeks vacation. So we went to different places. In 1950, we took a trip to France, to Switzerland, and to Italy. And it was one of the most interesting because we really learned a lot. We used to take almost every year a cruise. And of course, when we came, like for instance, when we came to Mexico, we looked up the Jewish community. And there was a gentleman there who knew me. We paid an evening for Friday night, and he invited all the Yiddish writers, and we met the Yiddish writers from Mexico. The same thing was in Cuba. See, there was a Yiddish school, and we looked up the Yiddish school, and of course, speaking Yiddish, we met them. And in Paris, we were sitting in a cafe, and we saw a person reading the Yiddish papers, and we went over there, and right away, we started to speak, and they said, what are you doing here? We told them we are. Well, he says, why don't you come and stay in our house? You don't have to stay in a hotel, after all. We speak Yiddish. And, of course, our big trip was in 1960, when I went back to the town that I was born, and we visited Leningrad, Moscow, and Kiev, and Warsaw. And that was the most exciting trip that we ever took. And also, in Moscow, we went to a hotel, and a couple was sitting at a table right across. So the man got up and said, Shalom Aleichem. He right away recognized that we were Jewish. And I went over to talk to him. And he says, Mein Sohn ist gemalt. Mein son is circumcised. In Moscow, he was bragging that his son
is circumcised.
And when we came to Kiev and we had tickets to fly to Warsaw, the inn tourists came and told us they are very sorry that there is no plane and we have to take a train to Warsaw. I said, a train to Warsaw? I have tickets. And I was invited here by Mr. Kushche. Kushche was in 1959 in Pittsburgh, and he was at the University of Pittsburgh. And my wife went to the banquet for him. And he invited everybody to come to Russia. I says, Khrushchev invited us, and I'm going to call him and tell him about it. He says, don't do it. Wait. 15 minutes later, he says, you don't have to worry. A plane will take us to Vilna, and a Polish plane will take us to Warsaw. And when we came back to Pittsburgh, we got a refund because they didn't charge us for the flight from Kiev to Warsaw. They gave us the money back.
And you don't know how interesting that she went to a banquet to hear for Khrushchev. Did you go to the banquet to Khrushchev too? For
yeah,
Khrushchev.
Sure.
And how? What was your impression of Khrushchev when he was here?
Oh, I read his speech. I mean,
yeah. And you, what about the Jews in Russia? What was your opinion of how they were treated when you were there?
We met a lot of Jews of Russia, and we became very, very friendly with them. And they had relatives in Pittsburgh, like Mrs. Ellenbogen. I don't think you know. Her father was a doctor in Leningrad, and we looked them up. And of course, they didn't know. They served us every time we came. There was a banquet for us, because to them, food is the greatest thing. And of course, we gave them a present. We gave them American money, and the Ellenbogens reimbursed us.
Well, the other Jews of Russia, were they treated well when you were there? Were they nervous?
See, the people that we met were, I mean, they wouldn't talk much about, see, and I don't know if I told you, I get the only Yiddish publication in Moscow. It's called Sovietish Heinlein, Soviet Heinlein. And one of the
Soviet
homeland.
Okay.
And one of the editors, there is three editors, is Shmuel Gordon. And Shmuel Gordon wrote a story about a couple, had two children, and both children died. So they had a third child, a girl. And when the girl was born, everything stopped. Everything was doing was for the girl. And even when the girl was 6 years old and she started to go to school, mother went to school with her. In 1941, when Hitler attacked the Soviet Union, she joined the army. And 6 weeks later, she was killed. Mm-hmm. When the mother got a letter that her daughter killed, she died. Mm-hmm. The father, who's a mechanic, he went to a school of mechanics to teach 1,500 kids to teach to become mechanics. And one day, a little girl came up and started to speak to him Yiddish. He immediately adopted her. And after the war, they lived together. A few words of Yiddish out of 1,500, and he adopted. When I read his story, I wrote a letter to the editor. And I told him I want to send him a present, anything he wants. So he said, he answered me, that first he'll send me a present, his publications. And afterwards, he needs a book, The Treasure of the Yiddish Language. And in Pittsburgh, Mort Rosenbaum, I don't know if you remember him, he was the head of the cult of the Jewish Y. He had a book, and I sent it to him. And since that time, he started to correspond. But in 1973, when the Yom Kippur War, I felt that I better stop corresponding with him, and I still get a magazine, but I don't correspond with him.
Is he still living?
He's still living.
Are they still able to publish a Yiddish magazine in Russia? They are.
The government publishes it.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. So you had, I wanted to talk about your travels. Then I wanted to talk about, we didn't talk at all about World War II. And what was going on in Pittsburgh, and what was going on with your labor organization?
At that time, very little was going on, because after all, everybody was interested in fighting Germany. We used to picket the stores that sell German goods.
Did you yourself picket?
What?
You picketed.
Yeah.
Oh.
See? Uh-huh. And we tried to keep in touch. And of course, the big day was in August 1923. The Soviet Jews sent two Jews to the United States, Schliemann Michaelis, who was the head of the Yiddish theater.
Okay, let's spell that. Schliemann
Michaelis. Is Solomon is the first name.
Solomon
Michaelis is Michaelis.
Okay, he was the head of the Yiddish
theater, and he was considered one of the greatest man in the Yiddish theater, mm-hmm. in this story. Mm-hmm. And Itzhak Pfeffer, one of the greatest Yiddish poets, and they came to Pittsburgh, and the Federation had in Carnegie Music Hall a meeting with them. And of course, they spoke in Yiddish, and there was a translator, and it was translated in English. But we went over to them and said that we want him to speak Yiddish. And we rented the Shelley Hotel for the next day, and they spoke, both of them.